heart smile. You marry music man, ballerina. You must have seen her dancing in the sand. Now she's in me, always with me, tiny dancing in my hand.
Live from the Gateway to the West, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, a newspaper publisher, Chris Simcock, who helped organize last month's Minuteman vigils and promised more in the future. Those were the group of people that were just trying to guard our borders, helping. Well, he was denied access to a Department of Homeland Security press conference in Arizona last week. Mr. Simcox, who writes for, edits, and owns the Tombstone, Arizona Tumbleweed, wants the American Civil Liberties Union to determine whether his First Amendment free press rights were violated. He said the Border Patrol refused to let him attend that press conference featuring Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff, who spoke in Douglas, Arizona, on the need for additional agents and increased technology to gain control of the Arizona border. Tonight, a very special report here on Coast to Coast AM as we talk with a guest, Frosty Wooldridge, about immigration and just its effect on the United States, not only today, but years from now. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, let me tell you, Frosty Wooldridge possesses a unique view of the world, cultures, and families that he obtained bicycling 100,000 miles around the globe in the past 25 years. He graduated from Michigan State University in 1970 and Grand Valley State University in 1973. And Frosty has worked as a college guidance counselor, a teacher in math and science, a ski instructor for the handicapped, freelance writer, volunteer inner city teacher, and a public speaker. He created a drug alcohol prevention program called Alcohol, Drugs, and Unique Alternatives that he presented to hundreds of schools across the nation, and created an environmental program called Closing Fast, a Global Environmental Crisis and What You Can Do About It. Frosty has also been a guest lecturer at Cornell University and has presented environmental science lectures at the University of Colorado, University of Denver, and Regis University. And he is our special guest on Coast to Coast, the author of the book Immigration's Unarmed Invasion. Hello, Frosty. How are you?
Good evening, George. It's certainly a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, likewise. By the way, my two sisters graduated from Michigan State, and they love that university.
Well, congratulations to them. And, of course, as an old Spartan myself, it's a great college, a fantastic university, and really the place where I started my writing career, majoring in journalism. And I'm forever thankful for the memories there. Certainly, back in 65, 66, we were the national champions with Bubba Smith and Duffy Doherty. And just a great university.
And that's football to people who think Michigan State was just a great basketball university.
Irvin, yeah, Magic Johnson, of course, several years later came in and won the NCAA championships in basketball, too. So Michigan State, of course, has a great tradition in all areas. Merit scholars and just a fantastic university. The Red Cedar, of course, is the river that runs through the middle of it, and I still have many fond memories of my time at Michigan State, and congratulations to your sisters. I'm sure they did, too.
Oh, yeah, they loved it. Hey, Frosty, how did you get involved in writing this book, a very good book, by the way, on immigration, with your background? I would have thought that that would have been an area you didn't jump into, but you've done it in a very big way, and I got to tell you, in a way that not a lot of people have, very comprehensive. How did this happen?
Primarily, my travels around the world on a bicycle brought me up close and personal, and certainly up close and ugly, to the crisis of overpopulation around the world. And in my travels from the Arctic to the Antarctic and twice around the world on a bicycle in these last 25, almost 30 years now, I happened to connect the dots. If you go through China right now with 1.3 billion people, they are now living the consequences of their fruition. that they ignored their populations exploding 50 years ago. India, with 1.1 billion, ignored their populations exploding. And Bangladesh, for any Americans out there who want a really sobering dose of the reality of what I saw, Bangladesh has a landmass of Ohio with a population of over 129 million people. And I simply am a messenger who has connected those dots and seen what's coming to America, because the world population grows by 10,000 babies net gain per hour, 240,000 per day, and well over 85 million per year. And we are now over 6.4 billion on our way to a high of potentially 9.8 billion. And the damage being done to the planet is horrific. But the third world is not slowing down whatsoever. And the line of immigration coming into the United States and other Western countries that have stable populations is unending. And these desperate third world people simply have really exceeded their carrying capacity. And they're now literally coming into our country at the rate of over 3 million per year now. And again, that line never ends. So we can never solve the crisis of the third world, but we can destroy our own country in the process.
Is it safe to assume, Frosty, that this influx of illegal immigrants has been occurring since this country started? I mean, and I'm not talking about the immigrants that came here from Europe and other areas to start this country, but that because record keeping was poor and monitoring was bad, maybe we've been getting millions of people coming into this country illegally from the get-go. Is that possible?
It's very possible, because the third world has always exceeded its ability to feed and clothe and house its citizens. And so, of course, they have been trickling in to whatever degree. Before 1965, however, it was only 170,000 per year since 1924. And that has been pretty stable, allowing us to assimilate them and to absorb them, for them to learn English and become educated in the American dream, and certainly educated to the point where we can have a functioning first world society. But now the numbers are quickening at such a horrific rate of speed around the third world that they're now pouring into our country, much like water coming into the Titanic. And you have to ask yourself, how does it serve this country, and how long can we stay afloat if we continue this massive onslaught of desperate citizens from around the world? It's a human dilemma. It's a human dilemma.
There's no doubt about it. We'll talk about a couple major things tonight with you, Frosty. One will be, of course, the illegal immigration. And then, of course, there's the legal immigration, because you are calling for a 10-year moratorium on even legal immigration. And I want to get your views on that as well. Is it also possible, because we talk a lot about this on this program, that there is afoot by globalists this plan to have this one world government, in that they don't care about immigration, they don't care about illegal immigrants coming into the United States, because as far as they're concerned, Mexico or wherever they may be coming from, we're all going to be one and the same anyway? Is that possible, that that's what they care about?
It's very possible that the New World Order, or the globalists, if you want to call them that, are in an intellectual cartel, in that they are the ones, much like most of the third world or all of the third world, there is a high class and there is a low class. There is no middle class. And the thing about intellectuals and elites and the globalists and the New World Order people, they think that they will always remain above the quagmire, if you will. And, of course, the crisis we face is that there's a never-ending onslaught. I mean, literally, we could take on 10 million people per year. There would still be 75 million people left excess in the world. We could take on 20 million. So at what point, we have to ask ourselves, do we want to become the low-wage capital of the world with 4 million hands coming, or 4 million bodies coming into this country every year? Now, we take on, you know, like 10 times more immigrants than all other nations combined. And like the Titanic, how much can we take on before we ourselves sink? And it gets down to carrying capacity, or the tragedy of the commons.
My son, who is graduating this Saturday, not from Michigan State, with a degree in law enforcement, wanted for his graduation present a trip to Las Vegas. So I took him there about 6 weeks ago. And in the cab, the cabbie was telling us that how, and I guess his numbers were right. He said new people are moving into Las Vegas. I'm not talking about illegal immigrants here, but there's a method behind my madness. He said that 2,000 people a day move to Las Vegas. And the one thing I asked him was, is how are you going to water all these people? Because, I mean, that's a problem. The fact that that natural resource that we take for granted may not be there one day. What are you going to do when you have millions and millions and millions of more people in this country? I mean, we're at, what, 300 million people now? And what are we going to be like in 20 to 40 years, Farsi?
You really bring up the greatest part of the what is called the exceeding carrying capacity, or the tragedy of the commons, and that is water. And what I've found in my travels throughout the third world is that third world leaders, again, Bangladesh, China, India, Mexico, South America, Africa, ignore the crisis, whatever it may be, the crisis of water, the crisis of renewable energy, the crisis of too many people, the crisis of they can't even feed them. And the problems get so critical that they become irreversible crises with unsolvable problems. Here in Colorado right now, we have just added 1.3 million people in the last decade, mostly people fleeing from California, fleeing from the East Coast. And they still have a place to flee. But Colorado right now has great water restrictions. We don't have enough water as it is. And we're going to add, demographic experts show that we're going to add between 4 and 6 million people to Colorado in the next 50 to 60 years. Along the same time as Arizona adds 4 to 5 million, and of course California is now slated, and it is growing by 2,000 persons per day, about 20 million in the next 30 years is what California is going to add. And of course, we don't have the water. It does not rain and snow more just because you grow the population. And so what is happening is our leaders are ignoring the same crises, and it takes you to the adage, the lessons of history are that no one learns from the lessons of history. And our leaders are simply blind, deaf, and dumb, or greedy, or literally inept to not appreciate the fact that we are literally going to run out of water. And so that as you grow these populations, you can't make them disappear once they get here. And then we all suffer just like they do in the third world. And water rationing will be a massive problem here in Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, and certainly California. So yes, we're building what I call in the book third world momentum. And this third world momentum means we're going to hit horrific consequences as we continue to explode our population through this immigration invasion and literally injecting a miserable mess for all Americans, no matter what their race, creed, or color, because overpopulation doesn't care about your race, creed, or color. It simply, once it's in, gets you in its grips, it does not let loose.
And I predict that wars will be fought over water one day.
Exactly, George. There's no question that we're already having water wars heating up here in Colorado. And I'll give you one. I wrote a piece called for the Denver Post a year ago called Too Many People, Too Few Solutions. And I gave the demographic prediction that 4 million more people would be added to Colorado in the next 50 years. And a man out in California wrote, and he says, Mr. Wildridge, you are totally wrong on that prediction, because I'm a 59-year-old about to retire here in the next 10 years, and there's about 2 to 3 million more of us in the Los Angeles area, and we are going to flee the cesspool of overpopulation in California and move to Colorado's western slope. You can expect 6 to 7 million people in Colorado.
Oh, my.
So, again, if you squeeze a balloon, it's going to go out to the left or out to the right. It's going to go somewhere, and so the same thing happens with populations. But if you look in Mexico, or you look in Bangladesh or China or India, they can't go anywhere because there's no place else to go. I've traveled throughout those regions, and my God, there is a person on every square foot of soil. And it is really horrific, because you cannot make those populations just vanish. They're going to be there, and they're going to live in misery. And we in the United States are headed in the same direction, much like the Titanic.
I got a mortgage broker from Las Vegas just fast blasted me, by the way, Frosty, and he said it's about in Las Vegas, 4,000 to 6,000 people a month are moving in, and then about 2,000 to 4,000 move out. So he's correcting the cabbie, but so we're in a range where a lot of people are moving there. And don't they in Nevada and also in California rely on a lot of water that I think even you do from the Colorado River?
That's the crisis, and that's the crux of it. I wrote a piece, and I write for newswithviews.com, and anyone who wants to see about 30 of my pieces there, and one today I wrote was Iraq Smells Like Vietnam, but I wrote a piece on the water crisis, and that's correct. The Colorado River actually feeds most of the West, and the crisis to Colorado right now is that it doesn't reach the ocean anymore. And, of course, when you keep adding millions and millions of people, siphoning off that for farmland, irrigation, and you have people drinking water and so forth, and the average American drinks or uses something like 300, 400, 500 gallons per day. Just think about adding 4, 5, 6, 10, 20, 30 million people, and you're going to see that the Colorado River cannot feed the rest of the West for much longer, and that we're all going to suffer because of that.
Let's go back. Let's begin talking about the illegal immigrants, first of all, in this country. Of course, they're estimated at about, what, 8 million? And that could be higher. Could be 10, could be 15 million.
As a matter of fact, it's well over 20 million. I've researched with Border Patrol agents the Bears and Stearns a report that came out last month showing that well over 20 million illegal aliens are working off the books, so much so that $400 billion is uncollected in IRS income taxes because the employers are not working these illegals on the books, and therefore American citizens are paying the difference. And that came out to well over 20 million. Some of the Border Patrol agents that I interviewed said they think it's somewhere between 23 and 25 million illegal aliens in this country.
Okay, let's assume there are 20 million illegal immigrants here in the United States.
Easily.
One would say those people who would kind of want to turn their back on the problem would say, look, they are doing tasks and fulfilling jobs at low rates that Americans just don't want to do. Is that true?
That's a falsehood and a misnomer, and I showed it in my book. The fact is that these illegal aliens, there's not 20 million, and even if it was as low as 10 million, I can tell you this, that there are not 20 million lettuce and fruit pickers out there. The fact is that illegal aliens have now moved into paving. They've moved into hotel and restaurant. They've moved into fast food. They've moved into roofing. They have moved into construction. They're now into all of painting. They're literally moving into all of the jobs that America's blue collars worked at a living wage. But what is happening is the corporations, the meatpacking corporations, Hormel, Tyson Chicken, Walmart, any of them and all of them, I'll give an example. Back in 1980, the average meatpacking American citizen was making $17.10 an hour with benefits. Today, the meatpacking plants pay $6 to $7 an hour with no benefits. And, of course, the illegal aliens have colonized those jobs, and they're literally the new slave class or the underclass. But they cost a whole lot more because their children go to our schools at a cost of $7,000 per child. Anchor babies, of course, cost $8,000 per delivery, and then you have to pay for them.
And definition of an anchor baby is?
There are 350,000 anchor babies born in this country every year at a cyclical cost of $109 billion. And these are women who come here, and I have a three-part series written with co-authored with a registered nurse, Stephanie Gabbard, in newswithviews.com. And you can go into the archives and see it's called The Abuse of the 14th Amendment. And these anchor babies are children who are born here and claim immediate American citizenship. It is illegal. And yet it's a misconstruing of the 14th Amendment. And in fact, you'll see in the pieces, parts one, two, and three, that Ireland is the last European nation to stop it, and they no longer allow anyone having a child in that country to have an automatic citizenship. And that's what we need to do also, because there are websites out there showing people from third world countries how to get into this country to drop their child.
When we come back, Frosty, I want to find out who supports this. And in terms of, you know, parties, for example, I'm sure this has occurred with the Democrats in office, the Republicans in office. It probably skews all that, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Both sides of the aisle are wearing the same sombrero, and there are definite reasons. Just follow the money and the power.
All right. Well, we will do that when we come back. And there's lots more to this story. Because let me tell you something, this affects not only you, but your children and their children, because the projections I've seen say that the United States, you think you have traffic jams today, especially those of us in Los Angeles, will grow to 600 million in 60 years. Now, what will it be like to drive cars? There won't be cars. Can't be. Not with that kind of population. 600 million people. Back in a moment.
Get it in writing with the After Dark newsletter. Subscribe by calling 1-888-727-5505. Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, we're keeping Lex busy. Not only is he working on all these Streamlink projects, but he's also going to be the guest editor for the June issue of the After Dark newsletter, and it's all on UFOs. So if you want to get 14 issues for the price of 12, just go to coasttocoastam.com and click through the orange type or call this toll-free number where there are operators there 24-7 at 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie with our guest tonight, Frosty Wooldridge. Frosty, where'd you get the name, by the way? Frosty. Every time I hear that, I think Burl Ives is going to pop up on us.
Well, during Christmas season, you can imagine I get hit with Frosty the Snowman a lot. My given name is Forrest. That's with two R's. My father named me after his best friend in World War II. He was a U.S. Marine along with Forrest Scroggs, and I understand that Forrest Scroggs saved my dad's life there.
Excellent.
Fighting in the South Pacific, and I was his firstborn son out of four sons. And he named me after Forrest Scroggs. I picked up the nickname back when I was 12 years old. It was a sports name, Frosty Pass Option Run, and I made a lot of touchdowns coach started calling me Frosty, and my brothers did too, and so that just became my name. It's been my pen name. It's on all my books and all my articles over the years. So
that's a great story too. Yeah. It really is.
Thank you.
It is amazing the camaraderie of our military and our soldiers. I spent 9 years in the Navy, and we've all our close rank of officers, we've all gone our separate ways, and we were from different states, Maryland, Boston, Chicago, Illinois, in that area, all over the place. But I'm telling you, the friendships that you have in the surface are just, you can't duplicate that, Frosty, any place. And I can imagine what your father was going through, and then naming you after his friend.
Absolutely. I was born on a base and lived on a base until I was 18. My father served 27 years in the United States Marine Corps, of course, with honor and with valor, and fought in World War II and Korea. And my patriotism, of course, as you can imagine, as a paper boy, 5:30 every morning, getting up on the base there and throwing papers to all the colonels and the generals and the majors and the captains and the NCOs and the master sergeants and so forth. Patriotism for this country and love of this country runs deep in my family. And the key here is that this country is under assault. And much like the Minuteman Project in the last month, and I just came back from Arizona and the aftermath of the Minuteman, American citizens are now standing up for America once again. The Minuteman Project was loaded with almost 1,000 people, mostly ex-military, from colonels all the way down to buck sergeants, standing on the line and making a difference for this country. And there's no question, if you have been through and gone through the military, I served at Fort Benning, Georgia, Fort Riley, Kansas, Fort Sam Houston. I was one of those 90-day wonders, of course, through the ROTC program at Michigan State, number one in my class. And the key here is that you cannot help but want to serve your country, because it is the future of not only your family, but everyone's family, and the future of our children. And as we talk about this thing tonight at length, let's face it, we are in a human crisis, a human dilemma of gargantuan proportions. And although it is so great across this country and the world, we can begin to take action proactively, first worldly, if you will, and not be a third world nation and just let it happen to us. We're too intelligent, we're way too educated, we're way too bright, Yankee ingenuity, and so I expect to win this thing. I expect to get those borders secured. I expect this government, this president, this Congress to finally turn this Titanic into warmer waters. To do anything less is treasonous. It is without merit. It is without moral compunction. And I will not breathe. I will not let any breath go by until I get this thing changed around, along with many other patriots across this country, whether it's Chris Simcox or it's Jim Gilchrist or D.A. King, who's a former U.S. Marine. Certainly, Gilchrist is a former U.S. Marine wounded in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. I'm 58 years old myself. And the fact is, men and women across this country are beginning to reserve their country, because this thing is going to be defined as the greatest crisis that America has ever faced in the 229 years of our history.
On one hand, Frosty, if we were all humanitarians, one would say, you know, these poor people are so desperate that they want to come to the United States. They want to have a better life for themselves. They want to make some money. They want to upgrade their families. And you know what? I feel for them. I got to tell you, if I were an immigrant, I'd want to get into the country illegally just to have a better life. And then on the other hand, we do have a country to protect. You know, we are Americans, and we have to get to a point where you say, enough is enough. How far do we do this before then we as a nation began to suffer? And as you've outlined, and as we'll continue to talk about tonight, some of the suffering can be monumental because of this problem. But it's a tough call. And as you said, it is a dilemma, because I wish we could help the entire planet, honestly, and upgrade people so they wouldn't have to want to escape their own country. These people are coming here, and by and large, we're not talking yet about terrorism. We'll get into that.
Sure.
But these people, by and large, just want a better life for themselves, and it's sad that they can't do it in their own country, isn't it?
That's correct, George. And the key here, and I outline it in the book, is that we as a country, because we have the ability, need to move with birth control and family planning and education for these countries, and we need to offer that to them, and we need to also help them with developmental aspects so that we can actually make their countries viable and sustainable. But the really big key is that we have to, and Don Collins and, of course, Sally Epstein, two people from Washington, D.C. that I work with, go around the world offering the contraception that is needed in these third world countries so that we go to the root cause of the problem, and that is too many children per family, which is the reason for the 10,000 new net gain babies per hour, 240,000 per day, over 85 million per year. If we don't solve that one, then we're all going to be, as I said, much like the passengers on the Titanic. Everything we're doing, if we don't solve the direction of the Titanic or the speed of the Titanic, we're going to hit that population iceberg, and everything we're doing and our leaders are doing is nothing more than straightening the deck chairs on the Titanic, or painting them to make them look nicer. And so the crisis we face, much like Bangladesh, China, and India are right now, are manifesting forced one child per family, horrific pollution problems, and so forth. We're all going to face that, and there's no need to face that. We're much too intelligent, much too learned in this first world country to let ourselves go to the horrific consequences now being experienced, certainly in Africa, certainly being experienced in Asia as it is right now.
What percent of the illegals are coming into this country from Mexico?
Right now, we have approximately 9.2 million illegal Mexicans in the United States, and that literally constitutes almost a tenth of the Mexican population. Now realize this, Mexico in the last century went from 50 million to 104 million people. In this century, Mexico is slated to double to 200 million people.
Oh my God.
Oh my God is right. and of course,
Okay, but getting back to my question, what percent do you think of the illegals are coming from that country?
What percent? Well, there are 20
million. And I know you've got to speculate.
Yeah, okay, well, just about 50% of all the illegal aliens on the 20 million. Now, 20 million illegals in this country was verified by Time magazine on the September 14th issue, Who Left the Door Open, by the top Pulitzer Prize winning writers Bartlett and Steele. In fact, they corroborated everything in my book, and demographic realities show that, almost half of all the illegal aliens in this country right now, or at least 45%, are Mexicans.
Okay, now what other countries then are they coming from?
Okay, now the Forbes magazine last March of 2004 reported a $7 billion, that's B as in boy, $7 billion a year people smuggling operation out of Asia, and that's China, Bangladesh, Pakistan, India, and you name it. And we have now in this country 2 million illegal Chinese in this country. We don't know the numbers of the Indians who are in this country, but we do know this, and we can segue into the disease aspects. Illegal aliens from India and Brazil and the Caribbean have brought, in just the last 3 years, 7,000 cases of leprosy into this country, which is, of course, now known as Hansen's disease.
Leprosy, that's what we would see in the old biblical movies where these people were put into caves and quarantined from the world, right?
That's correct. And in the last 40 years, there was a total of 900 cases of leprosy in the United States. But because of illegal aliens coming in from India and, of course, Brazil and the Caribbean, we now have over 7,000 cases and growing. There are 11 new clinics on the East Coast for leprosy-suffering persons, and it is now endemic for the first time ever in the United States on the East Coast there. And so leprosy is just one of the aspects of the consequences. And, of course, these illegal aliens work in what? Fast food. hotel, restaurant, roofing, you name it. Their kids go to our schools. 1.3 million illegal alien children go to our schools. And so if your kid goes to a school with a child that has leprosy, then, of course, your child is at risk. Of course, a few other diseases we can go into. But they're enclaving. And the problem with illegal aliens is that they don't want to get caught, and they won't turn themselves in, and they won't get checked out. And so they continue to spread the diseases to our children and to our citizens. If you're at fast food, then you have a chance to catch these diseases. If you're at the movies and somebody coughs or sneezes, of course, you are susceptible to tuberculosis, which kills 2 million people per year around the globe, and now, of course, is coming into this country by the thousands of cases, and or, of course, hepatitis that's coming in, Chagas disease. We can go into that later.
Is it safe to say that this problem, of course, is not partisan, that it takes all the political parties that have been in office, they're all equally responsible for this dilemma?
Totally. The Democrats and the Republicans wear the same sombrero. Reagan failed us miserably by granting the first of seven amnesties back in 1986, and then, of course, Bush 1 did the same thing. Clinton did the same thing, and of course George 2 or Bush 2 is doing the same thing. But the crisis, of course, is now the numbers are adding into such a quickening of the crisis. The quicksand is getting deeper. We're getting closer to the population iceberg. The Titanic is going way too fast, and it's not turning fast enough to go away from the disaster that is building. And again, it's becoming an irreversible crisis with unsolvable problems. And that's the problem. We don't have any Teddy Roosevelts out there right now. We don't have any Einsteins to say, hey, my God, we need to change this. We need to do something different.
Well, what is it that all these parties over the years have simply said, hey, let's just not push this as an issue? I mean, what did they know that we don't?
Well, what it gets down to, and I've noticed it in all third world countries, there's a high class and a low class, and the high class could care less about the low class, and the low class can't do anything about the high class. And what you have now is a Senate and a House of Representatives and a president who have come from the ultra rich, and they're in a good old boys club, and the corporations who literally buy off these senators and these House of Representatives in all of your elections, they literally, the big money goes to those who kowtow to the corporations. And so the corporations, after 1965, found out that they could get 1 million people a year into this country. They could bust all the unions and break down the standard of living in the wage scale so much so that the middle class couldn't even argue with it.
Oh, wait, now you may be onto something huge here now. Are you mm-hmm. saying that this was a concerted effort? Mm-hmm. To, you know, because I've been looking for the reason why nobody has stopped this yet. Are you saying that this has been an effort to basically get cheap labor into this country, bust up the unions, and destroy the back of the working man and women of this country?
That is exactly correct, and that's exactly what I stated in the book. It shows it in the book that the elites up there, the Ken Lays, just think of all these corporations like Tyson or Hormel or Walmart or any of them that are hiring illegal aliens by the millions.
Hold on, let me check my advertising list. Nope, they're not on it. Go ahead.
Okay.
Keep going.
Okay, they are all like a Ken Lay. Just think of Ken Lays multiplied by several thousand out there. And, of course, Ken Lay had a Learjet at his command every day. He had five or six different houses, one of them in Aspen that was cost $8 million. So you have these very, very rich and wealthy CEOs, entrepreneurs who want to just become mega rich, filthy rich, disgustingly rich, and at the expense of the American middle class, whom they literally outsource, insource, and offshore, and they found a fast way to make a bigger buck. And of course, it's a slave trade. It's a slave underclass, and living 10 or 20 to a trailer or a house, and doing all the illegal things they do, and then these people at the top are making billions of dollars and of course enjoying a fantastic life. The American taxpayer not only loses his middle class job, he loses loses his standard of living. He also pays all the taxes that the illegals don't pay. And, of course, the middle class right now is being dismantled and, in fact, destroyed by this. And so, yes, that's exactly what these higher-ups have learned, and that's what they're doing right now.
Let me tell you, Frosty, we get a lot of elitists that listen to the show primarily because they want to know what I'm talking about. However, 99% of this audience are tough, working American men and women or retirees or youngsters that are in high school. We've had 11-year-olds call the program. They're Americans. They're Americans who have worked hard all their life, or they're going to work hard all their life. We get calls from police officers, nurses, truck drivers, all of them concerned about the future of their own livelihood and their families. And I think the mere fact that this has been a concerted effort because somebody finally has had the nerve to tell us the way it is, and I appreciate what you're saying tonight, because I have been knocking my head against the wall trying to find out why in the heck this is being done. You know, I thought originally it was done to get sympathetic votes from illegals once they're allowed to vote. And maybe that's a reason, too. Maybe that's an offshoot of all this. But you're right. They want to break the backs of working men and women, and they don't care, do they? They simply don't care.
If you saw 60 Minutes with a colleague of mine, African-American Terry Anderson, two Wednesdays ago on 60 Minutes, they asked him about what was happening there in Los Angeles. He's a radio talk show host. And he just said, well, these janitor jobs were being paid $11 to $12 an hour and would be over $15 an hour right now for all of the working poor here in California. But the illegal aliens are coming in and taking the jobs for $5 an hour. And, of course, there's so many millions of them to do that, over 3 million in California right now. But, of course, the crises that he showed was that it's not a decent living wage. The misnomer of these are the jobs that American citizens won't do is the biggest farce on the American public. And for a sitting president to insult American citizens who have always done these jobs for a living wage is disgusting. That George Bush, because George Bush has really not done much of an honest day's work in his life. He's owned baseball teams. I think he goes out and hacks away at the wood just for show. On his ranch in Crawford, Texas. As a matter of fact, if there was...
Now you're bashing. You're bashing.
Oh, well, I'm just going to tell you some facts. If the 10,000 pounds of trash that are left by illegal aliens in that 40-mile sector in the Arizona desert there from Naco to Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument, if those illegal aliens by 4,000 per night were coming over the Crawford Ranch leaving the 10 million pounds of trash, I guarantee you the FBI, the CIA, and the National Guard would be right there in the Crawford Ranch in Crawford, Texas immediately.
Frosty, we've eaten up an hour, but we'll be back with a couple more. And then the last hour, we're going to open up the phone lines and give you an opportunity to chat, reflect, and even ask Frosty Wooldridge a question or two. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
A new way to get Coast to Coast AM to your computer. Available to all StreamLink subscribers at coasttocoastam.com.